To kick off with some brief introductions, my name is Marc Gauguier, and I head up the commercial property team at Farrow & Co, focusing on a broad range of commercial real estate investment and development work. On the investment side, we work for a broad spread of landlords and tenants, investors, owners, and occupiers across a range of asset classes, including, of course, offices of all shapes, sizes, types, and locations. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Kate Moyston, who will be our guest to join the debate about the future of offices and the role that the office will play in the post-pandemic world. Kate is a practicing chartered surveyor who was a partner in a national firm for 20 years before establishing her own consultancy 7 years ago. She advises a wide range of clients on commercial and residential matters. Known as being full of common sense and having a no-nonsense approach, Kate is used to finding practical solutions to issues. Welcome, Kate.
Good morning.
So, starting at the beginning, at the outset of the pandemic and during lockdown one a year ago, the market was talking about the death of the office. As the months have passed, it sounds as though people have become increasingly aware of some of the drawbacks of working from home. A recent survey suggests that only 8% of employees want to work from home 5 days a week, and that the number of employees going into the office in lockdown three is more than double what it was at the start of the pandemic. Now that we're hopefully emerging from lockdown three, do you, Kate, expect to see people migrate back to the office as restrictions start to lift? Or do you think that working from home will continue to be the norm, or indeed the expectation for most people?
I think it's quite interesting looking back over the last 12 months because clearly, when this all hit us, there was a mass exodus from the offices as we were all forced and obliged to work from home wherever possible. And initially, people really rather enjoyed having the freedom, as they saw it, of not having to commute. But if we look at reviews of colleagues and other businesses over the last, in particular, 3 or 4 months, most people have found that they really don't want to work from their kitchen table anymore. Some of us are very lucky and do have offices to work from in the garden or in various parts of our houses. But most people don't have that luxury. And of course, there are outside and external factors, not just work type, that make it virtually impossible or extremely challenging to work from home. If we look at general principles, really, we can now be more collaborative. We've all worked out how to use Zoom and MS Teams and WhatsApp video calls. And we're less used to being frightened by the use of that technology. So we can be paperless, we can look to be more collaborative. Some of us even see it as much healthier, promoting good well-being, working from home and having the ability to go out for a walk at lunchtime. We can have greater flexibility on our working day, making sure that we can get the work done that we need to whilst not having to commute. And of course, reduced travel is good, both in terms of time and sustainability. But what we have to counter this with is the lack of social interaction. And of course, exchange of information is very hard by video call. You know, if we're wanting to work on a joint spreadsheet or document, trying to do that over a video call is not easy. And many people find that it's extremely important to see their team face to face, both in and out of work. And generally, people feel that that should be centered around the office rather than remotely. I also find it's difficult to work out how we're going to train and teach the next generation. They need to be able to feel connected and make contacts. I saw some recently published research that suggested 69% of business leaders surveyed in the autumn last year said that they would definitely look at much more home working. But now that's been reduced right back to 17%. And interestingly, this morning we saw the Office of National Statistics reporting that 35.9% of the workforce worked at home last year, which was surprisingly only a rise of 9%, which I think shows how many people have actually still had to go out to work. So, do I think working from home will continue to be the norm? I don't think I do, but what I do think we'll have is a hybrid model.
Okay, well, that's very interesting. And in many ways, it chimes with what I'm seeing in the market and what I've certainly seen from and heard about from other professional services providers, obviously that being the particular space that I'm in. One way or another, though, it seems very likely that the pandemic, while not necessarily heralding a revolution, will have helped speed up the evolution of how we work and live and put paid to the 9 to 5, 5 days a week office world, together with the often grueling daily commute that went with it and ended up breaking spirits. As part of that process, do you think that the shift in focus from city-based offices and lifestyles to, I suppose, more suburban local living could inadvertently help to revitalise the high street and obsolete retail buildings, and perhaps result in widespread repurposing of space? And if so, what impact do you think that's likely to have on other real estate areas?
I think we have found that digital technology is now so dominant that the way we occupy space has been evolving anyway. Although, of course, during the last 12 months, we've been forced into that much more quickly. But I suspect that the approach to how we occupied offices was going to change. It's just changed more quickly. I think if we look at an office, generally, we would have looked to have 100% occupation 5 days a week, someone occupying their desk 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. But I suspect that looking forward, we're going to be looking at 50 to 70% occupation of space. The challenge around that, of course, is that it's likely to be 100% one day and maybe 40% the next. And it's how we plan for that. So I suspect that possibly we may have for the next couple of years the same amount of space being rented, but less desks. The office will look different, will be more social, and as I say, collaborative. We can physically work at a desk at home. We don't need an office for a desk, but we do need the office for the community hub and the way to interact. I think we'll also learn to utilise space more efficiently. Not one size will fit all, and certainly a hybrid model, which I believe Grant Thornton, when they surveyed 600 mid-sized business firms, suggested that 88% of occupiers would be using a hybrid model, whereby they gave their employees the flexibility to come in or out. Clearly, at the moment, we have health issues to deal with, so many offices are looking at Team A and Team B working. But also, I think going forward, it's how we occupy the space so that we aren't wholly overcrowded one day and empty the next. But looking at the effect on regional towns, I definitely think we will see a growth in localism. We're already seeing an increase in demand for space in the regions, in both large and small towns. The demand has noticeably increased in the last 6 to 8 weeks. I'm working with one client where we put together potential office space of 10 units, and we're already down to 4 because 6 have gone under offer in the last 8 weeks. Some of those properties have been available for 3 years and have suddenly been snapped up. There are, of course, many disparate stories. We know that over 17,500 stores closed last year, countered by a mere 7,500 new openings. Of course, retail is moving online, but people still want to touch and feel. So I suspect that retail will change, and certainly in the high street at the moment, there have been challenges around the covenant of the tenants coming in, many new tenants moving in. The entrepreneurial idealism of some people who've been working from home meant they've changed tack, changed direction, so they're looking to start up new businesses. I suspect we'll change the way a shop is used. It will be much more social. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean that we'll need less space.
Going back to something, one of your themes, which was localism, we've heard a lot in the press about the 15-minute city and the merits of working closer to home, but still being in the office. If the 15-minute city concept then is the way forward and localism continues on an upward spike, as I suspect it might, is the mega city then a thing of the past? And what do you think that means for prime city centre locations like, obviously, London? Are they still going to be a target for investors? I mean, there are obviously different perspectives. One thing I read the other day was that I think overseas investors, including from China, Singapore, but also US, are looking to inject around $46 billion into the London office market, which suggests that it isn't moribund. But I'd be very interested to hear your views on that.
I'm not convinced that this is a thing of the past. I think we will just be using space differently and less frequently. I mean, I think, Mark, it would be good to commute, not cheap by gel, but actually having space in the tube to get around London. And I think that is more what will happen. We've seen press recently on large size offices being required by some pretty major occupiers in the city. I think what will be of interest is the strength of covenant that the landlords will be looking for. And, you know, we've seen some very high profile failures, and those failures have the, I suppose, gravitas to be able to just walk away and leave their offices and occupied units, which has meant that quite a few of the investors have caught a cold. So they may actually be looking to get an occupier who they see as more serious for the long term and not just playing the game. I think we also have to consider the amount of people who live in the city. They will still move around the city to commute, although their 15-minute city is much more local within their larger city. I mean, our cities are beautiful, and maybe we'll actually just get to enjoy them more. Turning to the point about investors, I still think that London and the UK is seen as a safe place to invest. And if rents go down a little, which I'm not convinced they will, because I don't think demand has gone down, then we are still seen as a good investment. And based on what you're saying about the cash injections, those are huge sums of money into the city.
Yeah, agreed. And I think, just sort of segueing slightly, but on that theme, one thing that does seem to be pretty certain, and it's been borne out by certainly what I've seen over the last 12 to 24 months, is that demand is set to be increasingly centered on high quality grade A offices, wherever they are. Some reports, and I was reading something by Knight Frank, suggest that although London has the highest number of green rated buildings in the world, there could be a substantial shortage of space, despite what's been going on over the last 12 months. So do you think that in part is due to the growing focus amongst investors and other stakeholders on improving ESG performance, which is obviously one of the buzzwords before the pandemic, but has become increasingly relevant? I suppose, put another way, has the pandemic brought into sharper focus and accelerated the need for buildings to be both more sustainable and to support physical and mental well-being? And I suppose, with apologies for the length of the question, related to that, will the upfront cost in getting space up to scratch put some players out of the market, or does it give an opportunity to upgrade grade B buildings to meet those expectations?
I completely agree on shortage of space. I think there is a shortage of space, and outside the bigger city office locations, we saw a big loss in upper floor offices when you were able to convert those offices into residential. And there was already talk in the regional towns about there being a shortage of office space because so much was being turned into residential. Of course, the pandemic then struck, so we never actually saw that argument play out. But the way it's going at the moment would suggest that the shortage of space is only increasing. I think in Utopia, we definitely do want to be able to occupy sustainable, environmentally friendly space, but not everyone can afford it. And some people are way behind it in how they occupy their offices. We know that many local councils have been given a real target and focus, but they have some super challenges in place because some of them have occupied their buildings since the 1970s. It's very rare for an occupier to occupy a building that long. So there have been opportunities for them to refurbish, whereas the councils haven't been able to do that. I suspect that everyone will use their best endeavours. And of course, that is centred around what can be afforded. And also, I think, to an extent, what legislation is in place to force occupiers to maximise the environmental and social occupancy. I think if we look at some of the offices, we know that a lot of Grade B buildings can be more like rabbit warrens, but they have other potential uses, small serviced offices or residential. I think what is perhaps more interesting for occupiers at the moment is whilst they're going after new units, they look at retail or residential units, and they may have been occupied by tenants who have gone bankrupt. So not only do they have their own fit out costs, they also have huge strip out costs. And that all adds into the mix, which therefore means that when they then come to look at focusing on environmentally user friendly and sustainable units, actually they're running out of money. So I think, again, we're back to what you can be forced to do. And there isn't as yet anything in place, I don't think, that really supports suitable funding on that. And we do seem to be in a slightly disposable one-use culture at the moment, which I find an interesting antithesis towards everyone saying, well, it's climate change. I mean, you only have to look at the amount of masks at the moment on the pavements and in the roads to know that people aren't dealing with those in a sustainable way. I think we've seen a growth in the workplace that's also more centred around wealthier residential areas. And there, of course, people can afford to focus on sustainable and environmentally friendly occupation. But that isn't the case across the whole of the UK. So it is going to be quite a challenge to fund upgrading Grade B buildings and everyone being able to afford Grade A offices. Simply not going to happen.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting one because, I mean, we as a firm have been looking, like a lot of firms have, looking at ESG and its increasing role in all walks of business, but particularly obviously with the real estate focus. And it's that balance between utopia, as you rightly put it, and reality. And yeah, it's a debate, it's a whole debate for another day, but you know, what incentives are to be put in place to encourage that beyond the tick box exercise? And I think we've got a long way actually from the tick box of a few years ago. And I think that is another evolution that the pandemic has sped up, but there clearly is a way to go, and particularly when money is tight. it may not be the top of the agenda.
Exactly. And if you look at, Mark, some of the leases that I read when I'm acting for tenants, and we have 10 pages on how we must be very sustainable as tenants. But you look at the practicalities and it's simply not going to happen. You know, you can't always find the correct refuse collector to be able to put the right contracts in place. So, of course, it's something to move towards. But in practice, it's simply not that straightforward. And okay, when you have a giant occupying a building paying £1 million a year, they may well be suitably funded to be able to afford it. But the vast majority of occupiers are paying £20,000 to £40,000 a year. They've got very tight margins. You know, it's a challenge for them to have 6 bins to split between recycling and general waste.
So off the back of that, I think it's a good moment to ask a question that I wanted to pose to you, which is around innovation, and it rather fits in with what you've just been saying. So, you know, from the lawyer's perspective, we've seen a lot of change, certainly over my career over the last 20 years, I've seen a lot of change in the way people approach office lettings. And certainly there've been a number of disruptors pre-pandemic and, you know, very publicly looking to change the way things were going. But clearly innovation will be one of the good byproducts of the difficult times that we've been living through. And what I mean by way of example, I don't quite know how to pronounce it, but the increase in biophilic design, the incorporation of nature elements into offices, see Amazon's HQ in Seattle, and the Crown Estate's One Copen Street, which is all about sort of bringing nature into the office environment and sort of, I guess, giving a slightly more comfortable experience. Things like that, again, to your point, Kate, great if you're a multinational, incredibly well-capitalized business that frankly has the world at its feet. Maybe slightly different for others who aren't in that fortuitous position. But clearly, innovation is in the air. From your perspective and in what you've been doing, what's the most innovative response you've seen during the lockdowns and the pandemic?
I think from employers, it's really very basic. It's trying to make life normal in a very non-normal time. I think, going back to my point on digital technology, many, many businesses have dramatically increased and improved their use of social media. The top management, be that person number one with a team of three below him or her, has gone to every effort that they can to make sure that all of their team are happy. I've seen well-being days being offered. So that's an opportunity to actually get out and about, not use a day as holiday, but an opportunity to take stock. I've seen some employers taking the time when they haven't been commuting, because they've enjoyed that flexibility, to review all of their policies to be more inclusive and equal, offer everyone the opportunity to work to the best of their ability and in the right circumstances. None of this is very exciting or new, but it's basic life skills that people enjoy. I've seen team meetings during the day when anything but work is discussed. And of course, I think most of us have joined in on cocktail nights, beer rooms, escape rooms, quizzes, or whatever. I particularly enjoyed one where I heard that a team had all put together a cookbook. So from some very elaborate dishes to simply a printout of the local takeaway. So no pressure, no issues with hierarchy, just literally something that was fun and a bit different, because it is hard sitting on your own every day, trying to keep away from the family if you have one, trying not to keep away from them. And it's just trying to make non-normal normal for 12 months. But interestingly, I think that people, when they go back into work, will greatly appreciate the efforts that their employers make on benefits and on what they provide alongside the opportunity for a job, of course. And we mustn't forget that so many people have lost their jobs, and I suspect that that is only going to increase. So people are actually really appreciating what they have.
It's a very good point, and it's a very good reality check that there are, the office market is broad. And from the sort of hanging gardens of Babylon in Heddon Street, there's quite a difference between that and maybe not the finest example of office buildings in other parts of the world. So it's clearly not a one size fits all. But I think, yeah, we've certainly seen various bits of innovation across the piece. I mean, the most obvious thing is the increase in Teams and Zoom, both of which I had no idea about just before this time last year. But to see that, I certainly heard that in some schemes they're building into the office development screens that can be shared, so that if you're working from home, you're not in any way made to feel as isolated as you would otherwise be. Now, to your point, it's no substitute to actually be in a room with someone really in the long term, because actually that's probably where, you know, the best decisions are made and people read each other's body language. But in a needs must, it is an interesting innovation that will make business life certainly easier and more accessible. Okay, you've been an excellent guest so far. And to that extent, I'm going to ask you a last difficult question, which I think you may already have hinted at your thoughts on this, but we'll see. The pandemic has seen an unprecedented level of intervention from the government, with protections afforded to tenants and landlords being prevented from exercising rights that frankly are hardwired into UK landlord and tenant law, and actually are one of the reasons why the UK property market is considered to be such a safe and sensible investment for both internal and international investors. And the rules that have come into place on forfeiture, say, have really taken a number of landlords, not by surprise, but they've had a really significant impact, I think, on the way that they viewed landlord and tenant relationships. And, you know, a lot of tenants have played the game, some haven't. A lot of landlords have played the game, some haven't. But it'd be very interesting to see, I think, when we emerge blinking back into the light, what the government seeks to do in terms of, I guess, particularly what they're going to do about rent arrears and the vast amount of money that is waiting to be paid has been demanded and is yet to be paid to landlords. And I know there are consultations going on, and doubtless that will be a moving target for a little while yet, when the current restrictions end in June. From your perspective, though, Kate, what's the one change, or there may be others, that you would like to see legislators bring in to help boost the office market as a response to the situation that everyone finds themselves in now?
So, as you surmised, I'm not completely convinced we need to boost the office market. It seems pretty buoyant to me. What I'm more concerned about is what happens once all of the government support is unwound. And I think we can wrap up in that the point about rent arrears. And I think this goes back to my point on some of your bigger occupiers in this country, where they have definitely played the game and said, you can't evict us, we're not going to pay our rent. Whereas the vast majority of occupiers that I have either acted for or worked with, where I act for landlords, is that they are communicating with their landlords and doing their utmost to make sure that they pay. You know, they are taking mortgage holidays on their residential properties to use any spare cash they can to pay their office rent. And that's also where I think we see disparity between big and small occupiers. I think it is morally correct, if you can afford to pay rent due under your lease, to pay it. I have always thought that morally that is the correct thing to do. Whether commercially it's the right decision, I couldn't comment, but morally I think it's right. We have had a huge amount of support, and this moratorium on not evicting tenants is ethically right. It's the people that have taken advantage of it that I think have behaved poorly. Certainly, I act for various landlords where they have large portfolios of what I think most people would call small tenants, and every single one of them is on the phone on a weekly, fortnightly basis, updating, paying a few hundred more pounds towards their rent. The vast majority of people are doing their utmost to make sure they abide by their lease obligations. I think what might be interesting going forward is whether the way we deal with rateable value in this country is fair and appropriate. We know that online retailers have done very well with a reduced level of rates to pay because of the way they're assessed. And this is my point about when the support has been unwound, because at the moment, people in the high street are getting rates relief. But when that stops, I think we could see a few retailers who aren't on business parks or industrial occupied space where their rateable value is lower, really struggling. I also would be interested to see what funding or support might be given by the government on improving ESG performance.
Excellent. Well, that is a number of interesting points to put before the powers that be. I mean, I think I was listening actually on the radio this morning to the head of SEGRO and his views on rating and where things are going to go on that. Clearly, that's going to be a hot topic. I mean, certainly from our perspective, we wrote something like 200 concession letters in about 2 weeks about this time last year. And, you know, which is testament to the fact that landlords were, as I was saying earlier, playing the game and addressing the concerns that were in place. And to your point, Kate, I think the majority, I would say, of the tenants that we've dealt with have been sensible and have understood that there is a balancing act. Government intervention's great, but actually there is a world beyond this. And actually sticking your head in the sand, refusing to pay anything and not engaging is just not going to enhance the landlord and tenant relationship when we get back to normal. Kate, thank you. Extremely insightful. Thank you for sharing your experience with us. And it'd be fascinating to see how things go. Maybe we do a follow-up in a year's time to see how the market has played out then. But for now, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark. A pleasure.